All right, fans, what a treat this is. We've got him back to talk some ball with us, and I love having him on the show. He was Rookie of the Year, Sophomore of the Year, Junior of the Year. Now he's a big TV star, a writer as well, and that is Alex Pavlovich of NBC Sports Bay Area. Alex, great to have you with us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? That reminds me, we've been doing this for 8 years now, which seems like forever. So
I know. It was great.
A long time ago that I was a rookie on your show.
Come on. You started, and it was great, and we love having you, and your career has just gone bonkers. It's really done well,
thank you.
And we saw it coming. So glad to have you on today. And some of your thoughts, just how are you getting through this this part of not having baseball? And obviously we're in April, and we should be covering games every day. And how are you getting through this?
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, you know, like everybody, I've tried to stay at home as much as I can. Today we did go to the farmer's market in San Francisco because they're doing social distancing, and there's a lot of local farmers there who have really been hit hard. So I thought that was a cool thing. If anybody lives in the city, it's actually pretty safe, I think. And everybody's far apart from each other, and they're being very careful. But it was weird because on the way there, we drove past the ballpark, and just really strange to think that it's the middle of April. And, you know, me and you would be there pretty much every single day. And it's something I've gotten used to for 8 years now, and my summers have been the same. And, you know, we travel a lot, but, I mean, it's every other week we spend every night at the ballpark and have dinner there, and we're there late. We're there, you know, on weekends. So it's just been really weird, I think, to not have baseball and to not even really know when it might come back.
No, and we're there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon every day, too.
Yeah.
You know, catching up. So
no, I walk in with you a lot.
I know. You put in the time. You do, and you've done a great job with it. What's your thought? And of course, I'm down here in Arizona, and, you know, the weather is good. It's next week is supposed to be in the 90s, and that's just the beginning of what the summer could look like down here. But baseball, to plan, they've got to come up with some ideas, some options, and things like that. They've been kicked around. Everyone's got an opinion on it. Let me get your opinion on where you think the baseball season could be going, and is Arizona viable for you? Do you think that could happen?
I don't think the Arizona plan that got, you know, leaked or got floated as a trial balloon, whatever you want to call it, I don't think that's viable for a number of reasons. I think first and foremost, I think a lot of players would have issue with it, and you know, everybody's been careful, but if you kind of read between the tea leaves, I mean, Clayton Kershaw came out and said he would not stay away from his kid, and Mike Trout came out and talked about how he's going to have his first kid this summer. Those are big names. Those are big stars who have kind of come out and said, hey, you know, we're not going to spend 4 months in a hotel room. That'd be one concern I have. And then the other one is just, you know, I think putting all these people in one place, you're talking – probably close to 1,200 players, maybe 1,100 players, a lot of coaches, a lot of staff. I just don't know that it would be safe for that much time. The one thing I've thought about since the beginning, pretty much, and I, Ahmed Farid, I mean, me and him love to shoot ideas back and forth, and he's always been a big fan of, like, having a mid-season tournament. I wonder if at some point they just decide that instead of a season, maybe just have some sort of maybe it's a month, maybe it's 6 weeks, maybe it's 2 months, some sort of tournament that replaces the season, because I think it's just going to be really hard to find a way to play even, you know, 60 or 70 games. And at that point, maybe you just do something really creative and something that maybe replicates March Madness in a way or finds a different way to get players out there, but they don't have to be out there for 4 months necessarily. And you know, gives people a baseball product, because at some point too, the longer you wait, and this is dragging on, I mean, you and I have been there in the postseason. I mean, baseball is a sport where at some point in October, you start looking around and going, there's not that many places you can play anymore.
No, I'm with you. You know, the only thing I say to people, it's April 18th today. If you go back 90 days into January, you know, we weren't thinking anything about it other than the baseball season. If you go 90 days forward from today, who knows what it could look like? But I think baseball would like to get something going, whether it's the season that got leaked out or something that you suggest. I do think they're going to try to do something at some point. I think just to take it one step further, you saw today social distancing. People are out. People are anxious to get back a little bit to what life could be like. And if that's the case, that maybe the ball players could be put in a situation where it's safe enough, not with fans, but just amongst themselves to make it happen. So that's my thought on that.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing I noticed, and I really have tried not to leave the house for most of the last month, but when I do, I mean, every once in a while you have to go get groceries. I think people feel a lot better now that everybody's wearing masks and everybody mm-hmm. is staying 5 or 6 feet away from each other. And just people seemed a lot happier and a lot more comfortable. I mean, early on, it was a little bit tense when you would go somewhere, even to like Trader Joe's. So I do think maybe that will play into this down the line. I mean, maybe players have masks on, or maybe they, I don't know what you do. I think there are probably things that they could figure out where they make it a little bit safer and make people feel comfortable. And hopefully we have testing soon and mass testing, and that helps. But I agree with you. I think at some point they'll try to figure out a way to do something. I just don't know what it's going to look like. And I think you look at the calendar and it's going to be really hard to, in my mind, play more than a couple months of actual baseball.
No, probably true. That's what I say. Let's see where we are in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Hopefully it's better. All right. KMBR this weekend played a lot of Tim Lincecum. Of course, today we heard both his no-hitters and the 14-strikeout game against the Braves. And I did a little research online because I wanted to refresh my memory on no-hitter number two. And whose story came up first? San Jose Mercury News, Alex Pavlovich. On Lincecum's second no-hitter. So some of your remembrances of that.
The second one was the one here, right?
That's right, yeah. He only had one walk
recently,
in the second inning, Chase Headley, and that was it. No tough chances. And you really did a nice analysis of where he fits into Giants history with his two no-hitters.
Yeah, I actually just pulled that one up recently because we've been doing some retro stuff, and I think we actually showed that game a couple weeks ago maybe. So I did go back and read that, and it was fun to go back and watch that game as well. And two things that stood out to me when I was going back through it was, one was just how relaxed he was. And I mean, he was somebody – he's. I've told people this all the time. I mean, he was the most normal star you could ever imagine, and he was the only pitcher that I've covered who would come up to you 2 hours before a start. And we're not supposed to talk to a starting pitcher on the day he starts, and he would come up to you and start talking about, you know, neighborhoods in San Francisco or his favorite restaurants or whatever. I mean, I remember one time in New York, he sat with me and Andrew Baggerly for like an hour, and at some point we were like, aren't you starting in like 90 minutes? So I think going back through that no-hitter, there was a lot of notes from that day about how much he was talking to guys in the dugout, which is, of course, the unwritten rule of not talking to the pitcher. But I remember there was a quote from him afterwards where he said, it's more awkward when people don't talk to you than when they do talk to you. So mm-hmm. he was having fun. I think he embraced it. And then, like you mentioned, I mean, just the history he made, I think it's him and Sandy Koufax who are the only ones who have like two no-hitters, two Cy Youngs and two World Series titles. And
correct.
It's just
correct.
He started to get on these lists that were like him and Sandy Koufax, like him and, you know, just Hall of Famers. And I think it's just a reminder. I know he's not going to make the Hall of Fame, but I've always been a fan of like recognizing guys who had like 5 or 6 years where they were just incredible. And, you know, his peak was something that we haven't really seen around here.
No, and the other thing you pointed out, of course, he's the first San Francisco pitcher to have two no-hitters, multiple no-hitters, but he tied Christy Mathewson, of course, for the franchise, as Mathewson had a couple of no-hitters. So, yeah, very special. It was a good story. Yeah, that's exactly what you stressed, how relaxed he was. No tough chances, like in the first one where Pence made a great play and Sandoval made a great play. His slider was.
That's what I remember.
Say it again.
He had a mustache too. That's what I was just thinking. That's the main thing I remember from those photos.
Yeah, just look. You can't get enough of the guy. I just tell you, for all these reunions and everything, when he comes back, he is the guy. Alex Pavlovich with us, NBC Sports Bay Area. You've done a lot of writing, of course, for the website. It's always fun to catch up with you. And this week you wrote one story. It was really outstanding, I thought. It brought back a lot of memories, and that was the 10 worst trades of Giants history. And that was one. Some jump out very easily, but you came up with a couple of obscure ones. You wanted to relate a little bit of that to us?
Well, I'll tell your listeners, I texted you, I think, in the middle of the week and said, hey, I'm doing this. And I have a bunch in my head from the last 2 decades. And certainly there are ones that I had known about, like the Gabor Perry trade. And I think Orlando Cepeda, and you fired off probably 15 of them, I think. It started lifting every bad trade in franchise history, which was impressive and helped me quite a bit. So thank you for that. Yeah, it was interesting for me to go back through them. And what really stood out to me was that you kind of had all these periods where there were some really bad ones, including some of the most famous players in franchise history. And then recently, I think there have been some that got a lot of attention, but there was a stretch there, you know, for maybe two decades where there weren't really a lot of bad deals after Brian Sabian took over. And really, I think the only one that made my list was obviously the Nathan Liriano trade. And then I think number 10 was the Beltran Wheeler trade, which is defensible. It just turned out poorly. So it does give you a little bit, to me, it was a reminder a little bit of how they did get to the point where they won three titles, because they really didn't make too many awful moves in terms of trades. I mean, there were some free agents that backfired on them. Maybe that's a different list. But I think in terms of the trades, it wasn't too bad for a couple decades there.
No, not at all. You know, the Bobby Mercer, Bobby Bonds trade is in there. George Foster, of course, to the Reds is
George
in there.
George Foster, yeah.
But, you know, you go back, Jack Clark to the Cardinals was in there. Dave Kingman being sold to the Mets still, you know, with many more home runs ahead of him and his career. Then, of course, you get the famous A.J. Pierzynski trade as well. But you're right. And, you know, it brings me to this point. And, you know, it's obviously one of those things we love to talk about. Brian Sabian's legacy. Does he sort of get lost a little bit because of the last couple of years? You know, sometimes in a Hall of Fame career of a ball player, the last couple of years, not so good, and they sort of forget about all the great years. Does he get lost just a little bit, Sabian? Potential Hall of Fame general manager, really, when you look at his era.
Yeah, I think he does. I've always felt that way because, you know, you look at the guys who have gotten the attention, and well-deserved, but you know, I think from this generation, you're probably talking about Brian Cashman and Theo Epstein as guys who are going to get that attention, and there will be some other ones. But, yeah, he did build a team that won three titles, and people can say whatever they want, but they won three titles. And they were very successful at points, and he had a huge hand in that. He was the general manager for all of that. And you know, he certainly also had a nice career in New York before this. So I do think you look at what he did when he first came here and you look at what he did over the last decade, and it went downhill, but he was still part of this over the last 2 years. But everybody has those runs where it goes downhill. I just think you look at what he's done, and for me, it's right up there with just about anybody in terms of executives during his era. And it'll be interesting to see. I know, having been in New York, and I know that he always has had a good relationship with New York writers who he knew, you know, years ago and still sees. And every time he goes there, he still talks to people. So those things sometimes help when it comes to the Hall of Fame, just having that East Coast boost. And certainly the people out here know what he's done. But, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I don't think he's ever quite gotten the credit. I don't think that whole front office or that coaching staff. I mean, one thing that always stood out to me was that, and you're very close with some of these guys, that none of those coaches got poached. And that's something you generally see when a team has success. You see their bench coach gets a job. You see the hitting coach gets a job. It never really happened here for whatever reason, that those guys and even the executives in the front office never really got taken away. So I don't know that they ever got the credit outside of San Francisco that maybe they deserved.
I agree. Very loyal people. Very loyal people. All right, a couple of easy questions for you. A little bit of fun. What do you miss most about baseball that maybe surprised you that you didn't think you'd miss? So, well, you know, we all miss something about baseball. Well, what do you miss that say, boy, I didn't think I'd miss that?
That's a really good question. First, I think just the food, obviously. That's what people keep asking me. They're like, how much do you miss just being in a ballpark? Yeah, I miss doing those. To me, mostly it's, you know, the few hours before a game. I think it just watching BP and talking to people during batting practice and talking to people in the clubhouse and just trying to learn things and trying to figure out the direction of things. There's so many things that we, you know, you put in your back pocket and you think, maybe I'll write about this in 6 months. Maybe I'll write about it in 5 years. Just conversations we have. And you and I talk a lot in the dugout, but I'm working on something right now with Greg Elliott, who does the groundskeeping there. And mm-hmm. We were chatting the other day, and I was like, you know, me and Greg talk all the time just about what's going on around the park and what's going on with the field and what concerts came in. And that was a reminder of just how much it really is a people business and how much communication there is day to day. And it's really weird to go from that to obviously when you're just at home and doing Zoom calls and texting people. So I think that's the part of it. I mean, obviously we all miss the games and we all miss the excitement and we miss writing and doing radio and TV. But I think those few hours before the game when you're trying to figure out what's going on with the team is something that I really miss.
Yeah, you put it beautifully. It's what I miss most is our community, whether it's coming upstairs and seeing Maria or Matt or yourself or Henry and going down to the field talking to Greg Elliott or seeing, you know, Joel at the clubhouse or Orlando out at the, the gate when we walk in. And it's those people that you realize that's part of your baseball family. Kena, people like we just I miss seeing my part of my community.
Yeah, no, I think people I would compare it to school a little bit. I mean, it's the same thing every day for what, 6-7 months every year. And you see the same people, like you said, you see the same people every day when you drive in and when you're leaving. And it's always interesting the last day of the season. I think it is like a very last day of school vibe where you're like, okay, I'll see you in spring training. I'll see you in April. And you know that you're going to see everybody the next year. So it's weird right now to be in April and not go to the ballpark and not be seeing the same people.
Alex, I don't want to forget one of my favorites. And, of course, that's Janine in Section 115. I call her my favorite usher. I've known her for years, and that's part of my baseball family too.
A lot of good people there.
Right. All right, movies. I'm going to give you four movies. Give me your favorite. Bull Durham.
My four?
I'm going to give you four. Give me, of these four, what do you like the best? Bull Durham, Major League, The Natural, or Field of Dreams?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think Major League for me. I think when I grew up and started to get into baseball, that was I was never really – my parents were not huge sports fans, so I wasn't really the play catch outdoors with your dad type. But I think for me, it was kind of discovering the sport in different ways. And one of the ways was those mid-90s Braves teams and Cleveland Indians. And so Major League fit in with that for me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny why I ask you, because I'm watching these movies all the time. Now they're on all the time. And I hadn't seen Bull Durham for years. I hadn't seen Major League for years. And all of a sudden I said, you know something? Major League was a heck of a movie. And so is Bull
Durham.
We're
also overdue, I think. It's been a long time since there's been – we used to get a lot of baseball movies. It'd be fun to have a couple more.
Yeah, these have been pretty good. Well, it's a pleasure having you on. Really, it's great to catch up with you, and I hope we can do this as we go through the summer and see the twists and turns, see where it goes. I agree with you. I think baseball wants to do something. It's just a question of what.
I will do it anytime for you, Marty. And if anybody has any best Giants trades, they can send them to me because I think we'll put that together too. So I'm sure that was one fun thing with that story was a lot of your listeners and my readers and people chiming in, and they remembered those trades specifically when they were like 7 years old and they traded, you know, a player that was their hero. So it was fun hearing from people, and that's always a fun part of this job.
Oh, beautiful. You do it well. Alex, thanks so much. Alex Pavlovich, NBC Sports Bay Area. More coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.